Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for spending your valuable time right here, Brighteon TV, David Dubai, and many Ice Age conversations. How this food shortage narrative is going to be spun. Now there's record floods on the Mississippi after it was so dry they had to stack 100 million tons on the banks up and down. That river system might be flooded away. Southern Hemisphere, page after page of crop loss stories. Record flooding, massive amounts of rain, and now we have all of the sulfur dioxide swinging around the northern part of the hemisphere that is also dropping temperatures. We're going to run through some of these things. 20 years on the rice shortages, they say it's the heaviest in 20 years. So how is this all going to spin and morph into the messaging moving forward that you're going to have to share with everybody? It's going to be an equitable society. One loaf of bread for you, one loaf for me. Everybody shares, we're all equal. This is what we're going to talk about when we come right back.
With so much of the world's current food supply consisting of dirty, contaminated, genetically modified foods that may have been grown using herbicides and pesticides, increased scrutiny over what you put in your body is of the utmost importance. Even supposedly organic foods found on most grocery store shelves may contain toxic substances, chemicals, and other additives that can be harmful to your health. That's why here at BrighteonStore.com, we subject all our in-house products to extensive lab testing for glyphosate, heavy metals, and microbiology using our state-of-the-art spectrometry equipment to ensure the highest quality of cleanliness and purity. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
The Kelly Key easily converts your AR rifle to bolt action, allowing you to keep the rifle you love in assault weapon jurisdictions. The Kelly Key is a true fast drop-in solution. No permanent changes to your rifle. Import, transport, own, and have fun with your AR. Why the Kelly Key? Because a bolt action is not an assault weapon. Stay future ready from gun bans with the Kelly Key. The Kelly Key also lets you quickly and easily build your ideal hunting rifle, lets you build a quiet suppressed rifle, and benefits your long-range precision shooting. Available now at KellyKey.com with free shipping.
Many want.
And welcome back. Thank you again. Time's so valuable these days. We need to prepare. There's so many things to do to try to get ourselves ready for continuous replenishment of our own societies and supplies as some of these more complex supply chains break down. Now, one thing that's going to be used for sure moving forward is control of the food supply. So a lot of natural things happening at the moment with the ozone, with the sulfur dioxide, with the cooling temperatures, with the precipitation. So I wanted to try to run through a handful of the five different factors that I'm going to try to blend together into a wider, I guess, landscape. And then you can see how cleanly and clearly it's going to be used for control. And they're going to try to set a fear base in first of shortages. So you're going to start to hear about shortages and different types of foods. They're trying to demonize rice now as a methane emitter. So it wasn't good enough for us to just go vegetarian. Now you can't grow rice because it's responsible for methane. So again, it brings us back to the loopy bug thing. But let's take a look at some of these charts today. I'm going to try to walk you through. Keep it real simple. I like to use simple language when doing this. I could get all scientific-y, just like these publications do from NASA, NOAA, et cetera, to kind of confuse you so you don't understand it. And after you just don't want to listen or read because it's too complicated. So let's make it simple. The darker the brick red is, the more sulfur dioxide there is in the atmosphere. Now, when we're looking at sulfur dioxide in the atmosphere, we measured milligrams per cubic meter. And a cubic meter is like a cubic yard. It's nearly identical, 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet. And then inside a gram, you know, we have, 31.5 grams equals a troy ounce. Or you could just say 28 grams equals an ounce. But now we're down into the milligrams, so we're breaking that into tenths or hundredths of a gram. And it'll show you how much sulfur dioxide is. Well, sulfur dioxide is a very well-known sun blocker and particle reflector. So just putting two and two together, the darker the brick red, the more sunlight should be reflected. And how is this going to spin in? Well, you first need to find the connection once you see it. So let's step back just a couple weeks. For those of you who didn't watch the last couple programs, or haven't seen this in the news. I talked to a few people in Europe and they're like, what, that happened? I didn't know that. Absolutely, it did. This is Kamchatka in Russia. The final ash was around 72,000 to 78,000 feet. After the event was said and done and they could finally get proper measurements. Originally, the news came out with 65,000 foot eruption, and they gave you these little dinky, you know, images off AP and like, well, whoop-de-doo, it was like a little tiny firecracker. No, it was nearly a VEI 7 eruption. Somewhere between VEI 6 plus, trending toward VEI 7, which would be a Tambora type eruption. Now, it wasn't near the equator, so that's the thing. Equatorial eruptions are really nasty because that ash and sulfur dioxide gets caught in both cloud cell sets and it goes to the northern hemisphere to the North Pole and it gets drug all the way down to the South Pole. What we're looking here is pretty much the effect is in the red square at 60 north all the way to the North Pole. Now, if you look up there, you know, it's way northern Canada. You get into Sweden, Norway, Scandinavian nations, and then we come through some of the grain-growing regions in Russia. So the heaviest effect for agriculture with this would be northern Europe and Russia. Not so much in the United States or Canada. It's just too far north. That's a very, very furthest, barely edge that they can get any production of even 60-day short season crops. So what it is going to have an effect on, though, is our weather systems terrestrially, which will then affect further southern latitudes. So the ash is where you're looking in this box right now. And as it erupted, okay, it came out in one big plume, but this is how it is spread or spreading so far. Now, this darker red that you see is not going to stay this dark red forever. It is going to thin into a uniform blocking mass of sun-reflecting particles, light-reflecting particles, as this progresses over the next few weeks. Although, through history, there have remained these striation pockets, for a better term, just these lines that remain dark red no matter how much it's mixing. It never mixes totally, so you're going to get these bands or dots or blobs of the red that will never dissipate until the very, very end, which will be about 18 to 24 months from now. So this is another time frame. I drew the white arrow so you can see the general circulation pattern is heading to the north up to the Arctic Circle. And what is happening here is the cloud cells are combining and colliding in opposite directions with the polar easterlies. So this is, it's really interesting that it's exactly right at this mixing latitude band versus being further south or further north into 100% one of those cloud cells. It's right at the perfect edge of it, which is, you know, fascinating to watch this thing unfold. Now, I drew the black line. So you're seeing the polar easterlies on the right image there, and where the opposite spinning easterlies are hitting with what we see are regular patterns from west to east. There's a cavitation and a collision in the atmosphere, which I drew the black line right over there using null school. And what you're really starting to get is a lot of these gyres or these circles or, you know, tornadic spins, cyclonic spins in the atmosphere. Amplified, but very easily recognizable. It's almost like when you take a photo and you change the contrast on it and you can bring out something and make it very stark and really easy to see. Well, this is what we're witnessing right here. And this was from the 28th. So I'm trying to keep it within these last 3 days and, you know, jump back a little bit so you can see the progression of it. Again, what do you see right there below Greenland? Another cavitating swirl. Now, eventually they're going to put a name to this, but nothing out yet has come as a moniker for spinning it into the mainstream media for everybody to understand it. So they're going to have a real catchy phrase for it, for people to get it before they can run with it. Because the words being used now in science are not catchy enough for the news to run with the event. So look for it. It'll come out. I'm going to say it's going to be something with a spin angle to it. And then we jump over to the Windy maps. Now, Windy, in my opinion, is the best of this because it shows you the milligrams in the charts on the sulfur dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere. Now, lo and behold, that ash has gotten swirled up in our jet streams and pushed all the way down into central Mexico. So you're seeing it coming down from the Maritimes in Canada. And as we look at these charts today, not only where the blobs are, but look where the cavitation or the gyrae is in the clean, very clean lines that you see at the edge boundaries of clean air, sulfur dioxide ridden air. And it comes in different concentrations. We'll look at a few of these. This is for tomorrow or the next day on the March 30th, depending on where you live on the planet, you know, depending on the dateline. But what it's also seems to be setting in motion is a true cavitation in the atmosphere. Like a heavier drag is wind patterns are moving faster at some latitudes, but they're getting caught up and there's, you know, milligrams of this turn into hundreds of millions of tons of this in the atmosphere. So some wind's going to move faster, but just like water, if it's full of mud, you're going to start to see it spin as the clearer water can move around an object faster because it's not so dense. This is what we're seeing, density layers in the atmosphere here. So very cleanly, you can see that spinning phenomenon again. And we're going to focus in on a couple areas. I originally started doing this research just a few days back. So for me, I'm still trying to interpret it. So I'm not the all, you know all be all on this thing. I'm just really trying to get into understanding the effects on temperature ground as these sulfur dioxide clouds pass over. So what we're looking at here is tropical tidbits, and I'm going to give you the information so you can do this yourself. I don't think anybody should be reliant on another. You know, I'm going to teach you to fish, for a better term. And I hate to say teach because we're all in this together, but I'll give you the information, tropicaltidbits.com. And then you go up to the top and it says forecast analysis models. And you click on that and you go to thermodynamics. And then once you get there, it just means temperature, thermodynamics. Big word to say temperatures. Again, confusing. And then go into temperature anomaly or like strangeness in temperature. Temperature anomaly on the 2 meter, which is 6 foot ground level. And then you're going to come up with that chart on the left. Now, windy.com, you go in there and you'll see that drop down bar where that little arrow is. Click on it. It will allow you a huge amount of other drop down features. And you want to click on the SO2. Sulfur dioxide, and that is what we're going to be there. So I put the white line, and you can see that white line pretty clearly. What that demarcates is a temperature boundary, but what's causing the temperature difference in the record cold swinging across the UK and parts over into Scandinavia? Well, on the right side in Windy Map, we're matching up the sulfur dioxide concentrations, and you can see that frontal boundary, and behind it, we start to get a little cooler. So then you can start to match it up. And I have a friend in Cyprus, shout out Constantine, who's helping me with all the weather warnings going on across with the hail warnings, the gale warnings, the temperature warnings, and this sort of thing that's down in over off of Greece and Cyprus. Got somebody on the ground live time that we've been conversing this morning because I'm like, it's passing over you right now. So the air is becoming like a little stranger colored, for a better term. It just seems opaquey is the best description of it. But you can see where the darker reds are mapped out on the ground level where the temperature is dropping. This is a one-to-one correlation. So I want to do a few more of them. And I would ask you to comment out on the box there. Like, am I reading something into this? Is there a bias that I'm seeing because I'm looking for this information? Or does, you know, the thesis match the methodology or the actual observations? And that's a real question. Am I grasping at straws or is there something here? Because I really think it's important. As we move through the planting season, this is going to swirl for years, plural, like about a year and a half to 2 years. This is easily going to take us through one full planting season. So again, well, we'd look in a little bit wider out view on Europe, and you can clearly see all the way from Iceland down through Scandinavia down into right now what is Cyprus and Greece. And then if you go to the windy chart, that dark red is the sulfur dioxide concentrations at really heavy levels. And it's, in my opinion, responsible for the temperature drop we're seeing that's out of season. And it's just that temperature gradient follows exactly where that sulfur dioxide line is. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. Can I map it up again or am I just really looking at things? And then look at the temperature difference in Scandinavia and Iceland. So in the more northerly latitudes, it's going to have a way greater effect on temperature drops. So in my opinion, there'll be much greater ice increases or quote unquote less loss for this summer melt season. It's going to be an extended season, especially when you're looking at these degrees in Celsius. So when I look at 12 degrees Celsius, that's around 17 to 18 degrees Fahrenheit difference, cooler. That's a lot. That's huge for agriculture. Then if we come to the Middle East, which is normally a very warm place, left side, and this is the 26th, just a day or so ago, and the right side is where the sulfur dioxide clouds and concentrations were passing over the Middle East in Saudi Arabia and down near the Empty Quarter, down there when you get to Yemen. But, you know, you can see some matchups where sulfur dioxide is dropping temperatures. Now, in the Middle East, yeah, that's a biggie because, again, we're coming down to something like 15 to 17 degrees Fahrenheit below normal. But it's interesting how it just matches up. And if you look further over to Iran, just across the Gulf there, you know, it's not as dense. It's more in the yellowish. It just turned away from red. But, you know, the temperatures are affected there, too. And if you look offshore, you can start to see boundary layers there where temperatures are changing. If you come back across the Red Sea down into Eritrea and Ethiopia, you can see there's a little cooling there too that matches up with those same sulfur dioxide clouds. Now for the U.S., you know, you can look at this chart in a couple ways. I'm down in southern Mexico there where we have, you know, cooler than normal temperatures, but we have a, you know, rather heavy milligram set of variables in the atmosphere. And if you look at this chart itself on the right, you can see we're not, again, the same thing in the Middle East. It's not completely red, but you can follow that yellow streak all the way from the Great Lakes to Texas. And then on the left side, you can see that same cooling pattern from the Great Lakes down to Texas. And it moves all the way through into, you know, like say southern Mexico down there. So now I'm starting to get a little method to the madness, like, wow, wherever we see this, it does seem that it's starting to cool a bit. So if you're going to plant, please hold on. I wish you the best of luck in your planting season this year. It is going to be so important that we keep our plants intact this year. Please do not plant right now. It's a little early. We have two more of these fronts coming down that are going to be, you know, borderline frosts. And you might lose the plants that you're trying to, I'm just itching to get out there. I got stuff all over the house. We got stuff on the decks. We got things in the garage. I mean, we got hundreds and hundreds of plants in the, let's say like the 2-inch pots or something that we're trying to get out into the ground. But after seeing all this, I'm going to hold off for a minute. And as we come in through May 7th, it still shows some cooling and that will progress. And that's the furthest out I could take this, in a forecast. Maritimes of Canada. Now, what's interesting is now you can, at a wider view, you can see the boundaries of this sulfur dioxide. So I'm just trying to match up here, but let's go out into the ocean off of Newfoundland and, like I say, Canadian Maritimes. But where the temperature drop is on the left map there with a 2-meter anomaly, and you take it, or you can actually see where the edge is of the sulfur dioxide cloud, and it matches pretty well within the ocean areas there where it comes down and tapers into that sort of funnel. It's a good way to look into the future to see how our crops are going to be affected. And again, I'm pretty clean here in the center of China. You have a very strange, like almost noodle coming down through the center there, and then it matches up with that cold blob in central China. And I can't think that that's just some random happenstance. Then we go over to Bangladesh, which has been 20 to 25 degrees Fahrenheit cooler. There's news articles everywhere about how cold people are. There's baffled how chilly it is across the way. But, you know, when you look over on the windy map, again, on the second white arrow, that area in Assam, Arunachal Pradesh, and eastern India there in the Nagaland area, cold. Well, then you look at the concentrations of sulfur dioxide, and it kind of makes sense. Matches up there, too. And I'll bring you over with another one. Now that you kind of know what you're looking for, let's do a wider view. And then, again, I'll bring you out to the ocean. Come off of China, past Japan, past Taiwan, and you'll see that blue line in the center over there in the East China Sea, outside Japan. And then if you look at where the boundary is for the sulfur dioxide, it matches up pretty cleanly with where it's cooler is where that cloud band is, or the periphery edge of it. Taiwan getting, I can't believe down there in the center of Taiwan, it's 20 degrees cooler than normal. People are talking about it in Taiwan as well. People just can't explain or understand what is happening with this. So Iceland itself, even, you know, this kind of a little bit more red, you're looking about what, 21 milligrams, but before it was above 100. It's kind of coming down, it's dissipating the atmosphere. Left chart there. You can actually see the swirl in the bend following the sulfur dioxide cloud as it heads over Scandinavian countries on the left there. That'll be for May 1st, which is tomorrow. And again, if we come wider out, the boundary edge is very clean on the oceanic side of it, right chart there, where I drew the white arrow. And then back, you can cleanly see those two match. The temperature drop overlays right on top of the sulfur dioxide concentrations. And then you get, and if you do look just to where Iceland was and a little bit above, you'll see Scandinavia. Why is it so cold there? Well, the sulfur dioxide concentration is a little bit higher there than it is out in the ocean. So when people say, why is it so cold in Scandinavia? You can explain it to them. See, it goes from blue. And another secret when you're trying to read these charts is it looks like a laddered step down. When you get really dark blue and then it flares out and it's like a little bit lighter blue, a little bit lighter. It's almost like steps, stair steps stepping down. That's a very unusual temperature gradient. You don't often see that. I've been looking at these charts for 10 years plus. You hardly ever see that. Extreme storms where there's this huge temperature difference between the cloud tops and then the ground level on either side outside the storm, you're going to see that the stair step. But just in general, you don't, because it's more of a gradual mixing in the atmosphere. So now I'm starting to look at stair step boundary layers and then also overlays on the sulfur dioxide. And here's another interesting one going way out wide in the atmosphere. Left side is directly above Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Mongolia. But if you look at the windy chart, you can actually see that whip loop coming down. And on the other side, you can actually see the blue follows the exact same trajectory and pattern in the atmosphere. So now we're starting to get a little bit, I'm getting better at trying to measure this out. So then Scotland, magic, they don't know why. Meteorologists baffled as Scotland returns to winter. Hey, Scotland, I could tell you why. And look at these temperatures. They're going to go to minus 8 Celsius. And for those of you outside the U.S., or, you know, I should say in the U.S., that's 17 degrees Fahrenheit. They're returning to winter, snowfall, everything. If you're planting crops at this time, do you think that would wipe out part of your production going below freezing into the 17 degree Fahrenheit into the middle of coming into spring? You're without a summer. This is what happened after the Tambora eruption. The exact same temperatures that were unknown that just messed up their crop production, because in the middle of, was it June and July, they had frost. It even snowed the last week of June. And that time there were not such good supply chains, so a lot of people starved. Now, at the same time, since our last broadcast here, Mercury has started glowing with a tail, which means to me electromagnetic effects. So our cloud cells, our jet streams are being affected by this. Mercury starts with a tail. I thought only comets had tails. But again, that makes some credence now, goes right back to Velikovsky and Worlds in Collision, saying that Venus was a captured comet. And that some of the older recollections, myths, and stories of, you know, dragons colliding in the sky were plasma arcing lightning between planets. And there was a tail on Venus. Well, now something's happening with the output of our sun, or we're starting to get a tail glowing off and actually visible coming off of Mercury. This should be a number one news story on the planet, but I don't think they're going to run with it yet. They need the food scare first. So that's part one of being able to explain away the food shortages, so you understand when they're talking about runaway cooling, year without a summer, delayed planting, food price increases, non-availability, and then they run it with the 20-year rice shortage, they run it with the ozone depletion event in the southern hemisphere, you'll understand that, at least I did, how they're trying to connect all these dots together to get you into a ration system, digital rationing card, which will be accompanied by the digital ID, unfortunately. They're not going to run. You can't have one without the other. So actually you need all three. Central bank digital currencies, digital rationing card, and a digital ID. I think the trifecta of nastiness is going to come out at the same time that we're running into these food shortages. Just the way I'm getting at it, but we'll come back after the break here and talk a little more in depth about what the next steps are for the rice losses and how the ozone is depleting even further. See you then.
Many watching Bridie on TV will remember the fiery speech from Dr. Alan Keyes at the annual State Republican Dinner that ended in repeated standing ovations. Dr. Keyes has been an articulate and passionate spokesman for faith, convictions, and consistently strong enough to resist the tug of political convenience. Alan pierces through the ethical haze of our time and calls us to stand up for the truth, knowing that you cannot have the right to do wrong. Get your download of Our Character, Our Future, an audiobook by Dr. Alan Keyes, exclusive to the Bridie on TV audience. Dr. Alan Keyes personally read and recorded our exclusive audiobook version of his timeless essays in Our Character, Our Future for this very special promotion. You can order it by going to www.imtv.us and click on Special Offer. It's available at only $19.95 for a very limited time. You'll not only enjoy a tremendous savings, but you'll get an amazing piece of literature read by Dr. Alan Keyes himself. Get yours today. Go to www.imtv.us and get this Bridie on TV exclusive offer.
Hey, I'm Clay Clark. We're live here at the Reawaken America Tour. We're getting set up. We're getting ready to accommodate thousands and thousands of people. We're turning every square inch of this facility into seating capacity. It's going to be 100% sold out, and you can watch live on Bridie on TV. That's Bridie on TV. Thank you, Mike Adams.
Nearly all the vitamin C sold at retail today comes from China, and it's made from genetically modified corn. Even though vitamin C is a critical part of immune support, it's also critical to know where your vitamin C comes from. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon and BrighteonStore.com, and we only sell non-China, non-GMO vitamin C. We then subject it to rigorous laboratory testing in our own food science lab, checking for heavy metals, glyphosate, as well as microbiological contamination. Only after it passes our tests do we encapsulate it and package it for our audience. You can find it at BrighteonStore.com. It's not the cheapest vitamin C on the market, but it is by far the most rigorously tested and honestly sourced vitamin C available anywhere in the world. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com.
This is Zach Voorhees, and I recommend you check out Bridie on TV every day for new content by some of the content creators you love most.
I feel that Juvent is helping me to get better every day in every way.
That impact is what has been shown to help improve your bone density. Without that impact, you're missing a very important nutrient in your physical conditioning program.
The Juvent Micro Impact System allows the person to create more joint range of motion. Now I know there's a chance that nourishment can take place to that joint.
Get one of these.
Welcome back for the second half of Many Ice Age Conversations right here, Brighteon TV, 2 to 3 p.m. every other Friday. David Dubin taking you through some information on cooling and how our narratives will be set in the coming food shortage, quote unquote, for more control. Now, talking about sulfur dioxide and sulfur dioxide concentrations, cooling ground temperatures. Now let's add in some water for fun. We all like the pool. It's coming to summertime. Splash, splash. Need to take you back in time a little bit. January 15th. Let's remember that. Hunga Tonga eruption, largest water vapor eruption in human history, blasting water vapor up 180,000 feet into the atmosphere. There's about some new peer-reviewed research saying tens of thousands up to hundreds of thousands of times more ice crystal clouds in that layer of the atmosphere that's normally very dry than the normal, but they're very sure within 3 years it'll sift itself out. But we only have to wait three years for runaway ozone depletion. That's okay. We'll live through it. as long as you're in a cave, 10% more increase in moisture is what that put into the atmosphere. So put that in context just for a second here. One eruption came up out of the ocean and added 10% more moisture in a single day to the world's cloud cells, systems in the air. It pushed up 10% more moisture. So when you're seeing this record snowfall, record rains, record hail size, that's a direct result of this. Everything should be at least 10% larger. So a lot of these records, if they're only broken by, you know, a tenth of an inch or something, they're going to be broken by a full inch. If last year's record was broken by 1 inch, then the new record should be broken by, you know, percentages of tens going up from that. So the total mass of precipitable water adds into, that runs into the ozone depletion, which starts to give a narrative why Southern Hemisphere crops won't be so productive this year. We've already run through this point where we don't grow enough wheat currently on the planet to satiate the demand for industry and those who want to use wheat in products. 30 years in a row now, we're below that. So we've finally come over it. And, you know, I used this chart a couple weeks ago. 30 years in a row. So you could anticipate with even more difficulties now that that would trend toward a fourth year in a row of less wheat than we actually can grow than we can provide for the planet. So each year, you know, we're digging into the carryover stocks. Now, less grown crops like barley, millet, sorghum are going to have a much greater effect on price than, say, wheat or soy. You know, oats would be another one that's going to be disrupted. Let's talk about rice for a second. Global rice shortage. At the same time, the World Economic Forum comes out and says we should not eat rice because it produces too much methane. Well, it's not really it produces too much methane. It's after they harvest it, the way most farmers put nutrients back in the fields is they burn it. So if you've ever traveled in Thailand, like right about now, during the smoky season, a lot of people leave because it gets way too smoky. Everybody's burning their field debris, for a better term. Okay, if that could be managed better, but then you're going to have to provide a substitute for that because that's the way it's been done for thousands, plural, of years. And suddenly with the on high, you're not allowed to grow rice anymore. It's too much methane. Just like the cows, you can't have cows anymore, too much methane. So you can see this step-by-step complete constriction of the food supply. Well, it's at a 20-year low in rice at the moment. Leaders around the world and the IPC, everybody very happy about this because they want to keep it this way and reduce rice production further because it says, supposedly, more methane is released. But I'm just wondering, you know, how many of those ships cruising across the ocean for these multinational companies are releasing a huge amount of sulfur dioxide and methane into the atmosphere when they burn dirty bunker fuels. You know, I'm not the one with a giant container ship. I don't have a factory. Everything that the multinationals do is to sell you a product for their bottom line to increase it. And the advertising, billions spent on advertising to convince you to buy a product you don't need. And then the blame comes back to you, the individual, for the changes and problems around the world that we're seeing, from pollution to overpopulation, whatever the moniker is for the moment. How can it be blamed on us? We're not the ones that are billion-dollar companies pushing these factories and everything. I digress. Excuse me. Sometimes I get off on a tangent. But Argentina soybean output going to get cut even further. There's losses happening across Southern Hemisphere. The thing I wanted to focus on was the left here. The U.S. barge traffic halted because of floods. Now, I said floods already? Because just even, what, back in October, lowest water ever in the Mississippi. So low that you see that line of trucks right there. They were all trying to deliver grain from the barges off the river into grain silos and storage facilities, warehouses. But they became so full, and all the barges were trying to unload at the same time, so they decided to put it next to the Mississippi River under tarp. And then suddenly, these barges, they were all stuck, couldn't move. Army Corps of Engineers tried to dredge. They couldn't get enough clearance, and it became a bottleneck. There's millions and millions, tens of millions of tons of grain stacked up and down the Mississippi under tarp. And lo and behold, the largest floods, 1874, okay. That's in the upper reaches in the Mississippi. Ice melt, snow melt. And I can almost guarantee it with geoengineering, they're going to pound this place with a huge amount of rainfall. It's going to be record floods. And they could blame it right back on the sulfur dioxide. But imagine washing all this stored grain down the stream. And every single possible square inch of storage facilities on this river are so full that you couldn't even put another grain or of anything into it. Now, once that gets wet and that water in the flood starts to wick up the column there, they have to destroy that grain. So you might think, okay, well, it's just going to be the stuff under the tarps that gets ruined or flooded. It'll be everything that's in a storage facility too. So this would be one way to wipe out a huge amount of grains. Remember when I talked about stored grains, this carryover stocks, that was counted as this stuff on the Mississippi. So if you're going to wipe out 100 million tons, or let's say 80 million tons of stored grain on the riverside, then you're already at a deficit and you just lost 80 million tons in your carryover stock, which will feed into, oh, there's a rice shortage. Oh, there's a grain shortage. Oh, there's this or that shortage. You can see how it's moving. Oh, now we have the sulfur dioxide. Oh, there's delayed planting. Highest level in 20 years that comes back. And, you know, I must really split the hair on this one. It's the third time this high water level since 1874. It's not the record broken since 1874, but it's the third time since 1874 that it's gone above 15 feet. Now, this flood event is nowhere near complete. So at the end of it, it could be the all-time high record, but right now it sits in the top three. Highest river level in 20 years. Wait a second. Where did I hear that 20-year mark used before? Oh, yeah, the rice shortages. So 20 years seems to be a thing they're picking right now. So there's a lot of news articles coming out with the words 20 years on it. 20-year shortages, 20-year floods. Let's talk about floods. I like water. Like I say, summer's coming. Let's splash in the pool. We'll go tubing down the river. Rainfall. Anything pink at the top of the chart is literally off the charts, which would be a doubling, tripling, quadrupling of rainfall. We don't really know because the chart has been pegged, so your imagination can go wherever it goes. NOAA, you never give the true information. Why do all your charts peg? Can you ever put a band higher to account for these new measurements? Was it really that difficult to add a 1,000 on top of that, or a 1,200 millimeter range, so we can get the true indication of how much water has come down in these areas? Or wouldn't you want people to see the trend? Like, same thing with sulfur dioxide. That was literally off the charts for weeks, plural. They were pegged at 100. It was probably around 300. But again, we'll never know the true data, because even when you clicked in there, it just went, 100. It kept pegging at the 100 level there. So we can see the amount of precipitation from the Hunga Tonga eruption starting to really manifest and rain out of the skies. Equatorial, about, 10 degrees to 20 degrees south latitude, and right at the equator and a little bit over the equator, probably about 10 degrees north latitude, is where a lot of this water is getting sandwiched at the moment. So you look at it and go, okay, well, let's go up to the Philippines. It even is that far up north. Now, if you look at the correlating December to February 2023 NOAA temperature charts, which is sickening in my opinion, because you can't update your charts. NOAA, February 25th, that's your latest data points. What happened all of March? You're at least 6 weeks behind on posting the data. I wonder why. Because it shows no warming. White means nothing, zero. So you look at this and you go, wow, all those extra cloud covers having an effect on supposedly runaway global temperatures. Warmest year ever, ever. Why are they so late in putting out the temperature deltas coming up for March? I wonder. And if we scroll down to December, this is the most up-to-date data I could get for this slide presentation. NOAA is so far, this is a government agency. They should have up to the minute, up to the week. I'll give you up to the week. Doesn't even have to be up to the week. Where is that? You're 7-8 weeks behind on that. That's really unacceptable for a government agency to claim global warming up to the hilt and then don't even have the charts to prove it. Except, oh, wait, there's so much blue on that one in Australia, down 1 to 3 degrees. Wait, Could we map that up with the temperatures, with the rainfall and the clouds? Yeah, there's more cloud cover, so there's not as much sunlight striking the ground surface. So, of course, you're going to get moderate, even or even cooling a little bit. If we come up here to northern and southern parts of South America, we see the same thing. This is the same exact band where Hunga Tonga had erupted. And again, there's no 1,000 millimeter or 1,200 or 1,500 millimeter band on here, so we could truly see how much rain is coming down. It's masked in the data. It's hidden in the data itself. Well, we didn't know. We couldn't anticipate a chart needed to be bigger. Everything's supposed to be amplifying, so wouldn't you project in the future that you're going to need larger scales for measurement? Just saying. Southern Africa here, again, you look at that, I don't see that much warming in all these charts here. I see a lot of white or a little blue, some spackling of 1 to 3 Celsius, but it's not that much. And then if we look at the February 2023 NOAA data, I just showed you the NOAA data by the continents. And here's their map, fourth warmest February ever, 2023. Now let's look at those same areas I just showed you on the maps. Southern Africa, North and South America, Australia. I showed you all white on those charts because there was no temperature increases predominantly, some cooling even more in Australia. Now what do you see in the Southern Hemisphere? I see red, 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 more red, brick red, light red, pinks, happy. Now, how can the same agency put out the same data with two completely different sets of percentiles at the end? I don't know. I'm baffled. I'm truly baffled. You know, warmest on record. Yeah, you notice where all the warmest on records are, too, in the middle of the ocean where nobody can verify it. Unless you're sailing through that and you just happen to have a thermometer with you and keep your own ship log or your sail logs. Nobody's out there to say, no, it wasn't that hot. Come on. And then if we go to March 2023, again, some of the temperatures that we're looking at with so much extra cloud cover and anomalous cold events that have been through the last month, and they still show March's runaway heating. Again, there's a huge problem and huge disconnect with this agency right here. Like, see, what I did is I pulled the official data where they know scientists are going to go look at it, but this is for the general public release. So they're trying to keep that narrative of warming alive. But I just caught them contradicting themselves. So you can do that all day long, all day long. Now here is the ozone. What I want you to look at on the left side there is up near southern South America, that striation that has opened up. This is what they call the crop killer zone. The ozone is depleting much faster than anticipated, let's say. It doesn't usually get this kind of start or what we're looking at on the left side until somewhere around June. But the question was always from the beginning, knowing that there was all these extra ice crystal clouds in the mesosphere, how much and how far north was this going to extend off of the Antarctic Circle, and how far was that going to pull back? Was it going to be, would it stop at 50 south? Would it stop at 40 south, 45 south? Because the crops being grown down there are at much lower latitudes than in the States. You know, they're still producing crops down in Chile, Argentina, way south. Australia also, way further south. Tasmania, New Zealand, you know, comparatively to where we sit, and it gets really cold in some of these plains states in Canada, central Canada. These are way more temperate, you know. There's a lot of ocean surrounding these areas, keeping the climates very different. So what I'm looking at is that crop killer emergence in the ozone showing itself already on the left there. Now, if we go back to April 21, I try to keep the dates exactly the same, April 26th of 2021 versus left side 2023. What you'll also notice in the 2021 chart at the bottom left is that really nice chunky refilling, healing itself of 400 plus Dobson units, meaning more ozone in the column. That's great to see. I approve of a healed ozone hole to allow our planet to, you know, get back more in symbiosis or homeostasis from the damage we've done to it in terms of chemicals and pollutants. Not CO2, That's plant food. What we're seeing on the left side here, it's already really starting to show runaway and very amplified depletion of ozone. At the end of this, and as we get into July and August, this is going to become one of the number one news stories on the planet. Forewarning, front running you here on this one. They're going to have to use this as an excuse and a reason, both, to explain away more crop shortages and the reason for your price increases and the reason that there are shortages and the reason, please, let's all work together. Equity for all. We've been programmed and brainwashed in these last 3 to 4 years, really clubbed over the head like a baby seal for at least the last 5 years. Everything equal. No separation of anything. It's all like we're androgynous space aliens. Everybody's equal. We don't even have sex anymore. Sexes, I should say, according to the clown world over on that side over there. So you have all these different factors that are going to run in, and they're going to start playing and rolling in together and kneading together like a dough form as we roll out the cookie of digital cookie and digital IDs. I'm going to bake you a story here. So middle of June, early July, this ozone is going to cascade away, and they're going to be baffled as to how much and how catastrophic and how wide the ozone hole suddenly became out of nowhere, and all the crops will be affected. They're going to focus on barley, by the way. That'll be a first one hint. But as you look already at the charts here, it looks like Southern South America is going to be the thing that they'll focus on first. But this ozone hole, for real, is going to get really wide and really vast. There's going to be a lot of UVB radiation striking the ground, which will have an effect on bird life, plant life, and insect life, and then us as humans. So that'll be a big thing to run with. And as they run with that one, they're going to start talking about all these unusual, you know, flood events that are happening from the Middle East, which I'm showing you here, all the way up to the Mississippi Basin, which, by the way, wiped out 100 million tons of grain. We're starting from scratch. Plus, it's such a poor planting season. All the sulfur dioxide. We're going into crop short. Oh, the war's not over yet. Oh, by the way, what's that? Ukraine's only going to plant 12% of its field space this year. 1-2%. That's it. So we're going to have a huge disruption from Black Sea grains, which a lot of African nations depend on, which I'm showing you this chart here. And they're going to run with that. There's going to be seed shortages, grain shortages because of Ukraine. There's going to be some debacle with the amounts of grain and planting in the United States because of this floods on the Mississippi. And they're going to push in the sulfur dioxide. They're going to run with the southern ozone depletion event. The rice shortages are ongoing. And they're going to point to places like this. And I can explain to you why Sudan is happening at the moment. Heavier rains hit drought-stricken Horn of Africa. Ethiopia, right there. So why am I focused on Ethiopia and Somalia and Sudan? Well, you have the largest hydroelectric dam in Africa right there. Great Renaissance Dam. Now, this was constructed a few years back. It completed. They thought it would take 7 years to fill. It only took 2. So somebody knew the pattern was changing, that this thing was going to fill. Now, if you go right down, a little bit downstream, the Rosaries Dam, that is in Sudan. Whoever controls that dam controls the water for all agriculture in the new agricultural zones being built out in the Sudan. This is what they're fighting for. They're fighting for control of that dam and all the money that's going to come off of the agribusiness that's going to be pushed in there. Who controls the food controls the army and society. This is not about two factions politically fighting. This is about control of that water source for all irrigation and all croplands. And Sudan has been pegged along with parts of Ethiopia to be the new crop zone because they have a reliable water source with electricity for processing. This has been ongoing. This was talked about in World Bank documents for years on how this is going to be the new place to spark a industrial slash economic revolution across Africa. It will all start here first. Whoever controls this gets the lion's share, no kidding, of wealth generated by these new projects. Lion's share. I didn't, well, yeah, speaking of Africa, no pun intended. But that explains the news. So when you look at South Sudan, you look at Sudan, why they're fighting, they want this. You can see how the world's shifting now. Now you just need the food shortages to run into the digital ration cards. And I hope it made sense the way I was trying to explain it. Because of Sudan, think about that, double crop rotation, they got ports right there, a lot of Chinese investment, huge amounts of hydroelectricity, huge amounts of water that can be put out in irrigation projects. So if you're going to restart a defunct debt system in the West, where we can't really roll out more debt, you could go to these less developed nations and start the whole 80-year fourth turning over again by issuing debt. Oh, wait, the old system needs to collapse first. So I'm wondering if this economic collapse and food shortage things are going to run in tandem as we move in, because the debt will be restructured in Africa. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now.